It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We have conversations about important issues that are affecting our lives out there. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately has to come down to force. And Steve, we have to ask every day, if something's a really good idea, why do you have to force people, right?
Absolutely. It's a question that needs to be answered. And again, our guest here in the studio this morning, I'll let you introduce him. We're having a really deep conversation, and we're talking about the electorate who just doesn't really think very deeply. But that's a great question for them to ask. Or answer, I'm sorry, answer.
Well, socialism ultimately comes down to force, and if it's a great idea, then you should not have to force people. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. So great show planned for you today. I have in studio with me a new friend, and that is Cody Hubley. Cody, it's great to have you in studio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. You know, the media would really have you believe that the people like you and me are few and far between. So it's really great to have this resource where we know that we're not alone and we can come together and share some ideas without, you know, being ridiculed.
Well, that's so, and it's so important to be able to get our brains around these ideas so that we can converse with friends, family, and colleagues about these important things that are facing our country. So it's great to have you in studio.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking with Rob Nadelson in segments 3 and 4. As you know, he is a constitutional expert. He's a professor of constitutional studies at the Independence Institute and is also head of its Article 5 Information Center. And he's written the book he's the author of the original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. And he has written a recent piece in the Complete Colorado. It says, the Constitution guides impeachment, not politics. And be sure and check out Complete Colorado. They aggregate news from all over the state, from all different news sources. And then if you click on the banner ad at the very top, that will take you to all of their original content. So be sure and check that out. I know that when Patty, our researcher, goes to work and compiles all of the research for us every day, that's one of the first places that she goes. So we continue to see the socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, communications, and data. And so we need to be pushing back on that. And so that's why we do this show. And thank you to all those that make this possible, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your support and good work. And thank you to your listeners out there. Each of you, you're treasured, you're valued. And today, strive for excellence. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. You have a purpose, so go out there and do that. And be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. A lot of great information there. Sign up for my newsletter. And you can send me an email, kim@kimmunson.com. And for those of you that have recently sent an email, I did not realize it, but I was having some issues on receiving those. So I apologize for not returning those, responding to those, but we're going to get that taken care of. So if you want to reach out to me, kim@kimmunson.com. Okay.
And don't make us have Hillary come in and take care of your email issues.
Yeah, that would be interesting for sure. So, okay, our inspiration wisdom for today is from Albert Einstein. And he was born in 1879 in Wurttemberg, Germany. He died in 1955, Princeton, New Jersey. He was the German-born physicist who developed the special and general theories of relativity and won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1921 for his explanation of the photoelectric effect. And he said, life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. That reminds me of another quote somebody said regarding football. They said, as a quarterback, you always need to keep your feet moving. I'll attribute that to John Elway, but I'm not sure that actually was him. Okay, Steve, are you ready for the funnies today?
Yes.
Okay. Did you hear about the commemorative gun they're making in honor of the radical activists who have taken over the Democrat Party?
No.
And Michael Bloomberg? It's called the union worker. You'll overpay, it never works, and you can't fire it. Okay. Did you like that?
I was waiting for another one, but hey.
I only did one. The drummer must think it's a Monday morning, huh?
You know, his performance has been so mediocre lately. We need to sit down.
Maybe he's part of the union.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Let's jump in here to some headlines. This first one, you probably have watched all of the headlines regarding what's been happening out in Arapahoe County. And we expect our county clerks and recorders to make sure that our elections run with integrity. And it looks like there's some funny stuff that's been going on. Now, Steve, you may remember that before the election, I actually went down to the Douglas County, because I live in Douglas County, clerk and recorder, and I went through the whole elections division. And after a meeting with Merlin Klotz, and we also had him on the show, you know, I really came back feeling that no matter whether or not it was Republican or Democrat, that we could certainly take great comfort in knowing that our elections, that our county clerks and recorders were making sure that our elections ran with integrity. But as we watch this whole thing with Mike Kaufman running for mayor out in Aurora, and the night of the election, he was comfortably ahead. And then it seemed like there were these ballots that continued to appear. And that seems to be what has happened across the nation in these very close races. But interestingly, it says the Arapahoe County clerk vows reviews after criticism. And this is from Colorado Community Media. It says Arapahoe County clerk and recorder Joan Lopez vowed to review her office's processes and procedures after drawing criticism for ballot processing times in the November 5th election. We recognize that there's been frustration with the time it has taken to process all the ballots, a statement attributed to Lopez sent out on November 8th reads in part. Once the 2019 election is complete, we will review our processes and procedures with all of the county's relevant stakeholders. What does that mean? You know, that relevant stakeholders would be the voters, I think.
Well, keep going. It gets better.
Okay. She says, my staff and I are fully dedicated to conducting fair and transparent elections that ensure all Arapahoe County voices are heard, and we will continue honing and improving our operations as needed. Now, first of all, Steve, I don't recall that there's been any problems up until this time in Arapahoe County. Okay, just a point. Okay, the statement followed a flurry of attention on Lopez, a Democrat, after a Nine News reporter asked her how she would assure Republicans that the election process would be handled in a bipartisan manner.
Here it comes.
I think it's very partisan right now as far as the political climate, Lopez responded. I don't know how to answer that. That's absolutely astounding.
Nobody likes to be put on the spot, and some people handle it better than others, but this is a travesty. I don't know how to answer that.
The answer would be that we will assure you that we are going to make sure that every vote, that we have voter integrity, and that we are making sure that that we are nonpartisan. I mean, that would be at least a start, don't you think?
I think she'll be attending public relations training somewhere down the line.
Yes, probably. But I actually would like her to actually attend county clerk training so that she can get this right. But let's go on. She said Lopez defended the amount of time it took to count ballots, saying that her own election in 2018, in which she narrowly defeated incumbent Matt Crane, was not called until several days after the election. The situation drew the attention of Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, whose office sent observers to Arapahoe County's ballot processing facility. The secretary was aware that the people in the community were concerned, said Serena Woods, a spokesperson for the Secretary of State's office. We sent staff members to reassure voters. Now, I wonder if they actually got reassured on that. But I want to continue on. The two observers reported no irregularities in the tabulation, Woods said. Said the amount of time it took to count the ballots was pretty typical. Sending observers to county election facilities isn't unusual. To that point, we need to make sure that we have county observers from both sides of the aisle at these elections. It says the timing of the ballot counts took on greater significance in the days following the election as Aurora Mayor's race drew down to a dead heat, with former Congressman Mike Kaufman, a Republican, just a few hundred votes ahead of candidate Omar Montgomery. Tensions climbed even higher when officials discovered 828 replacement ballots in Denver and Arapahoe counties had not been delivered to voters until Election Day, despite sitting in a Postal Service warehouse for several days. Of the 828 ballots, Wood said 664 included the Aurora mayor's race. Of those 664, 141 cast a ballot. Now get this, Steve. The swirl of criticism around Lopez follows a year in which she has drawn heat for a number of actions characterized as partisan, including endorsing Aurora City Council candidate Juan Marcano, a Democrat, and donating to his campaign. Now, we reported on Juan last week. He is a Democrat socialist, okay? Very partisan. The move prompted Aurora's Election Commission and City Council to explore running their own election, though the idea was later dropped. And then, Steve, do you remember this? Asked about the endorsement, Lopez said she didn't think her actions were appropriate. Lopez also apologized on Twitter for a flyer printed by her office and distributed at Aurora's Global Fest celebration that included the phrase, "Vote early and vote often," a phrase generally interpreted as a joke about voter fraud. What's your thoughts on that, Steve?
A joke, yeah. In this situation, incredibly funny.
And so, you know what? I was thinking about it on the way in. And I think that Colorado actually needs to get rid of these mail-in ballots because, quite frankly, people that may not really take the time to understand the issues and understand the candidates end up, they can do what's ballot harvesting. You can have your friends come over and help you figure out who to vote for. And takes away the responsibility of everyday people knowing what the issues are and knowing who the candidates are. And I think that if we're going to have voter integrity, we need to make sure that we have voters who understand what they're voting for. We're going to go to break. Cody, you were nodding your head, though. What, you have a good comment on that?
Just looking at the situation, it's hard enough to get people to the polls. We need to make sure that they know if they're going to take the effort to vote that their vote counts. But when I was hearing this story, what it reminded me of was it was deja vu again from November 2018. I don't know if you remember in Florida with that lady, Brenda Snipes. She stepped down after, you know, there were reports of questions that people should have voted on that didn't make it to the ballot. But more importantly, thousands of boxes of ballots being discovered in warehouses that didn't count. This was in a governor's election. She had been in the job for 15 years since 2003. She was appointed, I think, by Jeb Bush when he was governor to replace someone else that was fired for incompetence, you know? It's just a situation that we see happening over and over again where the democratic process is failing. And it's not the voters' fault who are actually getting out and getting to the polls, even though it's a challenging thing to do for a lot of people. And we've got to make sure their vote counts. We can't have people in the job who just don't care about the importance and the sanctity of these votes.
Well, and maybe be doing things for partisan purposes. No matter which side of the aisle that we're on, we want to make sure that we have voter integrity on both sides of the aisle. And it looks like there's a big challenge in Arapahoe County. And to that point, people need to realize their vote does count. You need to show up, and you need to understand what the issues are. If you don't take the time to understand the issues, then I think you have a responsibility to not vote. And so with that, let's go to break. We've got some more headlines to go through. This is Kim Munson. This is the Kim Munson Show. I have Cody Hubley as our guest in studio. We'll talk with Rob Nadelson at the bottom of the hour. Actually, segments 3 and 4, we'll talk to Jason McBride at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Doctor, my eyes.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. It is Monday morning. Wishing you a great day today. And thrilled to have in studio with me, new friend, Cody Hubley. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking with Rob Nadelson in segments 3 and 4 about this whole impeachment process. But Steve, this is absolutely unbelievable to me. This was reported by KDVR. It says, 5 Points business owner is battling human feces problem. It says, a business owner in Denver's 5 Points neighborhood is frustrated about finding human feces on his property. Jawad Bazar says homeless people are defecating on his property on an almost daily basis, and now he's refusing to clean it up. Bazar is the CEO of Forethought.net, an internet service provider. He said syringes also litter the ground. Employees have been assaulted. According to Bazar, I've been chased with a 2x4, a knife, a pipe. A man bashed in my windshield with a rock, said Tamara Chapman, a financial controller with the company. On Friday, Bazar recorded an alleged drug deal happening outside his office. Every day, 2 or 3 times a day, we're running people off, he said. Bazar has called police to complain. There have been periods where we literally call 10 times a day, he said. However, he is now the one in trouble with the city. Bazar is refusing to clean up the mess. Because it's a biohazard, it could be infectious. I didn't hire these people to clean poop off the ground. I can't, as an employer, just say, go and clean up the feces. Bazar said, I'm not the one doing this, and they won't do anything about the people committing the crimes. But I'm the one who's easy to find and easy to punish. I love this. The Denver Public Health Department tells problem solvers it empathizes with Bazar, but says the feces removal isn't their problem since it's happening on private property. A spokesperson also tells Fox 31 the city issued several warnings prior to handing Bazar a citation. Bazar says he just wants someone from the city to care about the challenges he's facing. He claims Denver police rarely respond to his calls in a timely manner. He worries about the safety of his employees. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. The government's primary job is public safety. I think it's a lot of politicians don't want to be seen as anti-homeless or heartless, he said. Cody, this is absolutely astounding to me. This is about property rights. And because of public policy, we have people that are defecating on somebody's private property. It is a public policy decision, and now they are fining the guy who owns the property. What do you think about that?
Sure. So you've got people who are defecating and using drugs and leaving these biohazards on private property, which we understand it's private property, but the police refuse to remove them when he calls the police. On the other hand, the government comes in and says, this is your private property, so you've got to clean it up. You know, we saw this situation earlier this year, January all the way through June at Starbucks. Starbucks, wonderful bathrooms. Obviously, a lot of people discovered that as well, a safe place to use drugs. So we had several workers at Starbucks go in, try to clean the bathrooms up, and get stuck by needles and have to go to the hospital and get prophylactic treatment for HIV, for hepatitis. So now several Starbucks locations, after a petition where 3,700 people signed it on this coworker.org, Starbucks has Sharps boxes in their bathrooms because of this.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, we see this here, too. You know, we've had a King Soopers location in town where they replaced the lighting in the bathroom with these blue lights to make it harder for people to find their veins in the restroom so that they couldn't shoot up as easily.
Wow, that is astounding. I actually had missed that Starbucks story, so I just Googled this. This is interesting. So we talk about free markets. This was published 21 minutes ago by Fox Business. It says Starbucks attendance declines in wake of the open bathroom policy. Researchers found people were less inclined to visit the chain because of its overcrowded lounges and bathrooms. So we're going to probably see the free market start to address this. But let's go back to what is happening with Mr. Bazar out here in 5 Points. Here's a guy who has a business. He's paying property taxes, or the property he's renting is paying property taxes. He has employees. So he's paying payroll taxes and all that. And he's got his controller, a woman, has been attacked 3 times. And the police are turning a blind eye to this. And, Cody, that is one of the main things of government, is to make sure that we are safe as we go about our day. And if we're not, then we're not able to go after those things in the Declaration, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And so one of the things of the police is to defend or to protect private property so that this gentleman can actually go out and go after his dreams. This public policy, Cody, I have to ask you, of creating victims and dependency, and then I think handing them a ballot so that they can then ballot harvest this and take it down to the clerk and recorder. I know that seems a bit pragmatic, but I actually think that that's happening to some degree. What's your thoughts?
Sure, I agree. You know, it's a weird situation where, and we see it more in San Francisco too, in California, which we're seeing a lot here in this state now, where there's kind of this fight happening between people who are trying to be good, upstanding citizens, run their businesses, and the government comes in. And, you know, obviously we want to help each other. We want to uplift people who are affected by drug abuse, but we're going about it in a way where we're protecting, you know, these really disturbing public behaviors that are starting to affect business interests as well. You know, I saw a little bit of this in Arvada, where I live. I've seen on Nextdoor, you know, people get together and talk about issues in their neighborhood. They were concerned that the G-Line that finally opened had brought in a new homeless population. And people were complaining that they couldn't go to these areas that they had, you know, they had gone to for years and taken their kids, their daughters, out for bike rides and things because of what had become, you know, popular in this public space. What do we do about it? I don't know. How do we make sure that people are getting the help that they need, you know, and not victimizing homelessness while at the same time making sure that the people who are paying taxes, who want to feel safe and secure and enjoy the public spaces that their tax dollars go to, can actually go out and still enjoy life and feel secure in their city and their home?
Well, I'm going to ask this question because it seems like when government gets involved, particularly in, let's say, in homelessness, homelessness has gone up, you know, and so you have all these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that they don't really care about results. They are living off of, it's become an industry. Homelessness has become an industry. The mentally ill has become an industry, and they're on our streets. And instead of really helping these people, what it's doing is tearing down the safety and the opportunity of everyday hardworking people. And you see this disdain for this particular gentleman and his business. And this has got to stop. We've got to change this. And we're seeing that Colorado is becoming kind of California wannabes. And we need to really go to work to try to stop this. And one of the first things to do is to make sure that police are there to protect private property. And the other thing you and I mentioned when we had coffee last week is good manners. I mean, my gosh, how do we have people that can graduate from our public education system without the good manners to realize that you don't go to the bathroom on other people's property? I mean, I don't understand it.
I think it's just that drugs become the number one priority. It's not just that they don't care about their fellow, you know, citizens, their fellow man. It's that they don't care about themselves. Their hope, their passions in life has been lost. You know, a lot of our jobs have disappeared in this country. I think people, they need that responsibility. They need a job, they need a responsibility, and they need something to do and something to feel proud about. And I'm not sure there are enough opportunities for that anymore. And drugs are readily available. Drugs are readily available. They're coming across the border, and instead of closing the border, we're keeping it open. So we've got this situation where, you know, we're trying to bail out the boat without plugging the hole. It's a weird time. And to ask this gentleman, this business owner, to clean up what is biohazard, what's known as biohazard in the medical community, it's really a travesty. I mean, he's not trained in this. He's absolutely right. What would happen if one of his employees got stuck by one of the needles?
Probably get sued.
You know, the guys in San Francisco that go and spray bleach on the streets to prevent the hepatitis outbreaks, they're making $100,000 a year doing this, and they're heavily trained. They're wearing, you know, the full Ebola suits mm-hmm. out there. This gentleman doesn't have that. Is the government going to start providing these resources so that he can go out and clean up these needles? Or are they going to provide someone to do it? It's weird how these policies, you know, on the paper, they sound good, and they're certainly great sound bites, and they appeal to the part of us that wants to take care of each other. But when they roll out, they have all these side effects, just like the drugs that we take. You know, they have all these side effects that we didn't realize. And once the side effects happen, it's really hard to unwind those laws, you know, and it's hard to fix them again with more regulations because there's just more loopholes. There's more side effects from it as well. What do you do?
Well, I think that that's why, as we look at these decisions, we always have to be moving towards freedom and responsibility. My friend Ben Martin says that liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And I think that we have public policies that are making people victims. I truly believe that people can make choices to get out of that. And I will say, you know, Donald Trump, since he's gotten into office, there's been 6 million jobs that have been created under this particular economy. And so we need to make sure that we are doing supporting public policy that creates opportunity for people, and that we do not use public policy to make people victims and dependent. So with that, though, let's talk to Jason McBride. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, how are you on this Monday morning?
Oh, I'm fabulous. Did I hear you say I'm going to be there for the third and fourth segment today? Because I'm going to have to drive really fast if that's the case.
No, I said that Rob Nadelson will be here for segments 3 and 4, and that you were at the bottom of the hour. I just got things mixed up. I'm having a little bit of a Monday morning, Jason.
All right. Well, I'm glad you are and not me.
Okay, but I cannot believe that now we are, you know, in the middle of November. And there are things that people need to be thinking about as we come into the year end. And one of the things has been IRA contributions. So what do people need to know about that?
Well, one thing to know about that is you don't have to make a contribution by year end. You can wait up until your tax filing deadline without extensions. So you can go up to like April 15th. Now, for a lot of people, they'd rather get it done. But if your income limit is going to be, or your income's going to be very close to the limit, it might make sense to wait until you've done your tax return, because you don't want to make a contribution and then find out that your income was too high, Kim, and have to take the money back out.
Okay.
So as far as the limits, now with a regular IRA that's tax deductible, part of it depends on whether or not you have a 401k at work. So for example, for a single person that is what they call a participant in a 401k, and participant just means you have one at work, whether you're contributing or not. You know, if your income is over $64,000, you can only make take a partial deduction on your IRA contribution, and if it's over $74,000, you can't take a deduction. Now, notice, Kim, I didn't say you can't make the contribution, right?
Right.
Because a lot of people get confused, and in fact, I almost just said it myself, that you can't make the contribution. You can contribute to a traditional IRA, no matter how much your income is, and you just may not be able to take a tax deduction for it. You can put the money in, you just don't get the upfront deduction. But then what's strange is that piece you put in, it's always tax-free when it comes out. Now, let me ask you, who do you think the government makes responsible for keeping track of that piece that's not taxable when it comes out? You think they do that for you?
No,
they don't do that for you. You got to keep track of it. So it could kind of become a pain in the neck to have non-deductible contributions inside of a traditional IRA.
Okay, I think that's about as clear as mud, I think.
Yeah, it's The rules, I mean, just to put the money in, the rules are somewhat confusing. And then the other one is people always forget it has to do with having access to a 401k. So let's say you have no access to a 401k or a company plan. It doesn't matter how much your income is. You can make a contribution to an IRA, and you can take the deduction for the full amount as long as your spouse doesn't have access to a 401k either.
Okay, Jason, my eyes are glazing over, and that is why people need to call you, so that you can help them, you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management can help people navigate this, because I'm not sure I understand it, and I think I kind of understand this stuff. So have people, friends, you should give Jason a call at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or check out AIR, that's AIRpresidential.com, that's AIRpresidential.com. because I think people need some help navigating these waters, Jason.
Well, I think so. And, you know, if you think putting the money in is hard, wait till you try to take it out. I mean, if your eyes are glazed over now, I could spend an hour talking about that and not cover 10% of it, and you'd look like you had two glazed donuts on your face.
Okay. Well, Jason, that's why people need to give you a call. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one, Kim.
Okay, thanks so much. And we'll go to break. We'll be right back with Rob Nadelson.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and thrilled to have in studio with me my new friend, Cody Hubley. It's great having you here.
Thanks for having me.
And we have on the line with us Rob Nadelson, and you know him. He has the Independence Institute's Constitutional Studies Center and its Article 5 Information Center. He is a nationally known constitutional scholar and author whose research into the history and legal meaning of the Constitution has been cited repeatedly at the U.S. Supreme Court, federal appeals courts, and state supreme courts. He is widely acknowledged to be the country's leading active scholar on the Constitution's amendment procedure and among the leaders on several other topics. He is the author of The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. And we're going to be talking about a piece that was recently in Complete Colorado, where he says the Constitution guides impeachment, not politics. So, Rob Nadelson, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you? It's great to be back with you.
It's great to have you. There's a lot of fireworks, circus, all kinds of stuff going on in Washington, D.C. with this whole impeachment process. What's your thoughts on it, Rob?
Well, let me first say that I didn't choose the headline, politics doesn't drive impeachment, the Constitution does. Politics actually has an important role in impeachment, but it's a mixed process. And so the motivation for impeachment usually is dislike of an incumbent by an opposing party. Not always. I mean, many judges have been impeached, and that is often the result of simply good information about bad behavior coming to the attention of Congress. But presidential impeachments tend to be motivated by political animus. However, once you get to the Senate and to the trial over whether the president should be removed, there are important legal protections and legal procedures that constrain the process and make it much harder to have the kind of show that we're seeing in the House of Representatives.
Okay, but don't you think that it's going to appear very partisan since the House is controlled by the Democrats and the Senate is controlled by the Republicans? Don't you think that's the way that they're going to try to couch it?
Well, it's going to be partisan, yes. I mean, as of right now, the impeachment is breaking down on partisan lines, but that was also true of the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, who was Abraham Lincoln's successor. That was a Republican impeachment. And the impeachment of Bill Clinton was mostly a Republican affair. So it's not that unusual that the impeachment appear partisan in the House of Representatives. When it gets to the Senate, though, there are protections involved that require that any impeachment really be any removal actually be a bipartisan affair.
Okay, so Rob, explain this to me. My understanding was the whistleblower, that actually the procedural rules were changed before the whistleblower came out and said that a whistleblower would not have to have firsthand knowledge of something, that it could actually be quote-unquote hearsay. And I, from what I can see, just kind of, you know, watching it a little bit, is that Adam Schiff is trying to hide behind all kinds of procedure. And when I was on city council, I realized that sometimes instead of people trying to get to the right answer, many times they would hide behind procedure and use procedure to their advantage. And that seems to me like what is happening with Adam Schiff right now.
Well, I suppose Adam Schiff would respond that if they dismissed what the whistleblower had to say because it was hearsay, that they would be hiding behind procedure. That having been said, I do think it's very strange to bring about an impeachment inquiry based upon hearsay evidence, second or third party hand evidence. And there have been a number of instances in this and of this happening in the course of the proceedings where there was second or third party evidence that that the media have blown up into something more. I'll give you a good example. The testimony of Eric Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union, that was trumpeted by the New York Times and by CNN as corroborating the claim that there was a quid pro quo for the release of Ukrainian aid. Well, actually, when you read the particular part of the testimony that they were basing their story on, Sondland had made the assumption, based upon second or third hand evidence, that there was a quid pro quo, and he had so informed a Ukrainian official. But in the same testimony, he said actually he didn't know there was a quid pro quo. He didn't know why aid was held up. He didn't know why aid was released. He didn't know who held it up. He didn't know who released it. And yet none of that firsthand statement about his lack of knowledge made it into the CNN or New York Times stories. So the use of second or third party evidence is, I think, strange and inappropriate.
Well, and Patty had pulled another piece regarding, this is from the Washington Examiner. It says, why not call it a bribe? Democrats have focus group tested their impeachment strategy for maximum effect. It says NBC News and Reuters were savaged by the anti-Trump resistance movement this week for warning that Democrats would miss their opportunity to move public opinion in support of removing President Trump from office if the impeachment hearings fail to capture the attention of the general electorate. Not only is this analysis correct, but NBC and Reuters are also not alone in recognizing that Democrats need to appeal to more than just obsessively engaged former Russiagate activists. Democrat leaders themselves recognize this too, which is why they are workshopping their talking points and buzzwords for maximum impact and reach. So what's your thoughts on that, Rob?
Well, this shows the political part of impeachment at play. It's a mixed legal and political process. It's both. The Constitution says that impeachment can be based on treason, bribery, other high crimes, and high misdemeanors. The Constitution says misdemeanors, but the word high does go with the noun misdemeanors. And what that conflates down to is that you've got to demonstrate that the president committed a felony or that the president was guilty of a breach of fiduciary duty, the kinds of duties that we impose on bankers and accountants and other people who handle other people's money. It was pretty clear that the quid pro quo talk was not going to go anywhere. I mean, many people, including myself, raised the question, well, even if there was a quid pro quo, it looks like business as usual in the conducting of foreign policy, big deal. And so they decided for PR purposes, the Democrats did, to try to shoehorn President Trump's conduct into the theory that it was a bribe, because, of course, bribery is impeachable. The difficulty, of course, with that is that bribery is usually about a public official using his powers to get personal enrichment, and there's really no claim that President Trump got any personal enrichment from the request that, or even if they complied with the request to investigate Joe Biden. And so their position, well, he's using his position to advance his own reelection. Well, If that's the case, then practically every member of Congress should be removed from office, because that's what members of Congress do. I mean, they use their position to secure their reelection. I mean, when a person running for Congress says, if you elect me, I'll give you free health care or free college or whatever, that's exactly what they're doing. If that's bribery, then Bernie Sanders certainly doesn't belong in office, and neither do most members of Congress. So it doesn't fit well within the bribery characterization either.
Okay, but what about the bribery characterization of Joe Biden, where he is actually on tape saying that he was going to withhold aid to Ukraine if they did not take this investigator or prosecutor, whatever it was, off of the case with his son, who was, I've heard the amount of money, anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 a month, sitting on the board of Burisma. I mean, there's actually a video of Joe Biden saying that. So what would you say about that, Rob?
Well, I would say that if the theory about President Trump is true, that he was trying to extort something from the Ukrainian government to help his reelection or to help his own situation, if that is true, then if that, in fact, is impeachable, then what Joe Biden did was certainly impeachable. Absolutely. However, that having been said, Kim, I'm going to surprise you a little bit by saying that I don't think what President Trump did was impeachable, and I don't think what Joe Biden did was impeachable either. Joe Biden, when he had that conversation, was carrying out Obama administration foreign policy. Look, if you're carrying out administration foreign policy, if you're conducting foreign policy, if you're trying to accomplish something for the benefit of the United States, whether it's an investigation into corruption in another country that affects our country, or whether it is the removal of a prosecutor for foreign policy reasons, the fact that you have an incidental interest in that, the fact that you may incidentally benefit from it, doesn't make it impeachable. Let me make it more explicit. If you're carrying out a legitimate foreign policy of the United States, the fact that that might incidentally benefit yourself or your family does not mean that you're guilty of impeachable offenses.
Oh, very interesting. I think then the case is if it's not impeachable for Joe Biden, then the allegations that are against Trump, those are not impeachable as well.
That's correct. We have, in logic or in law, we have an argument called an a fortiori argument. It means that if something is true, then by reason of that being true, it's even more, then another thing is even more true. And the way we would phrase it is to say what Joe Biden did might have been wrong, you might have disagreed with it, but it was not impeachable. If it was not impeachable, then a fortiori, Trump's conduct was not impeachable.
Okay.
And the other way of looking at it is if Trump's conduct was impeachable, then a fortiori, Biden's conduct was.
Okay. And that Biden was also carrying out U.S. policy, so then I think I would have to ask the question about then Obama. Was he also doing something impeachable?
You would have to ask that question. You'd have to get into the reason for the motivation for the request that the prosecutor be removed. Now, of course, the Obama people claim there was legitimate foreign policy reasons for doing that. This is one, Kim, this is one of the dangers of going down this road of making the conduct of foreign policy a subject of impeachment. I don't think there has ever been an instance since the foundation of the Republic where the president's conduct of foreign policy was deemed to be an impeachable offense, and for very good reason. The president is supposed to have very wide latitude in foreign policy. One reason we have an independent president and not a prime minister dependent upon the legislature is because the founders wanted to have an official who could conduct foreign policy with dispatch, with secrecy, and effectively. I mean, that's a reason we have a presidency. And so when we start getting into the situation where any president's going to have to look over his shoulder and say, hey, can I really say this to Prime Minister Smith or to Ambassador Jones? Gee, I might be impeached. That puts America in a very dangerous situation.
Oh, most definitely. So, hey, Rob Nadelson, let's go to break. When we come back, let's continue on We do need to talk about what happens when this, if and when this gets over to the Senate. So this is the Kim Munson Show. I have in studio with me Cody Hubley. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we have Rob Nadelson on the line. We're talking about this piece that was in Complete Colorado regarding the Constitution Guides impeachment, not politics, although politics is very involved in that. We have Cody Hubley in studio. It's great to have you here. And so we've talked a lot about the political component of this, Rob Nadelson. Impeachment, first of all, do you think that there will be a vote for impeachment for President Trump?
You know, I don't know. And I have to say, Kim, I'm a constitutional scholar. I'm not a journalist. And so I don't follow all this stuff day to day. What I can tell you is that if there is an impeachment vote, it goes to the Senate, the charges are going to get into very heavy water. And I think it's worth for the listeners understanding what this procedure is like in the Senate. First off, the senators themselves serve as jurors, and they're on special oath to do impartial justice. They're not allowed to talk or to make speeches. I mean, some of this posturing that you see in the House of Representatives can't happen in the Senate. The senators can't even ask questions. If they've got a question, they've got to put it in writing and send it over to the presiding officer. The presiding officer in the case of the president being impeached, the presiding officer is the Chief Justice of the United States. And so he's going to make sure that legal standards of evidence are honored. This nonsense that we've seen in the House with, you know, second and third hand hearsay is very unlikely to have any purchase at all, any traction at all in the Senate. In addition to that, the articles of impeachment, that is the specific charges by the House of Representatives, have to be handled one by one in the Senate. They have to be voted up or down individually. They can't be combined. They can't be split. So you have to have individual votes on each one as it comes out of the House of Representatives. There has to be clear and convincing evidence. That's a high evidence standard that the president violated his duties as president. And again, it can't be just policy arguments. A lot of the people behind the Trump impeachment seem outraged that he wanted to conduct his own foreign policy rather than running everything through the State Department. Well, he's the president. That's his right. That's his power. It's not for the bureaucracy to lecture the president about what he can and can't do. And then each one of these articles not only has to be proven, but two-thirds of the entire Senate has to vote to convict. So it's a very different procedure. And what's come out so far is so flimsy and so unlikely to comply with that procedure that you have to ask, why really are the Democrats doing this?
And why do this so close to an election? I mean, the American people right. can actually decide. And I think it was Congressman Green from Texas said that we need to impeach Trump because if we don't, he'll get reelected, which I found very
telling. Yeah, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said very much the same thing much more recently than that. It is apparently an election year gambit. And that's also a matter of concern because impeachment really has never been used that way. There have always been political elements to it, but the idea of using taxpayers' funding in the House of Representatives to do your opposition research against a candidate, that is somewhat new.
Well, and I think the American people are looking at what's happening in Congress and saying, wait a minute. We elected you to govern, and instead we're seeing this circus. Cody, do you have a quick comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, it's like the boy who cried wolf. Since Donald Trump took office, we have seen a concerted effort to counteract him at every step of the way. At this point, the impeachment hearings are just the next phase after the Mueller report kind of failed or fizzled out. It's just the next step of this. And at this point in the process, I'm exhausted by it all. I just can't even go back and remember the dozens of other ones where, you know, the media, bombshell, walls are closing in. Is this the beginning of the end? We hear the same talking points over and over and over again, reset every 6 weeks when that doesn't work. For me, I think the obvious thing was I read the transcript, and it just made it so clear to me. It's hard, you know, even if you're a Democrat, it's hard to look at the what happened with Joe and Hunter Biden and not feel really icky about it and not realize that it's something wrong. And I think that Donald Trump came to office because he promised to put an end to this. You know, drain the swamp. He promised to end these quid pro quos, bribery, whatever their focus group is telling him to call it. He promised to end these situations where these politicians are giving away our government, giving away our liberty, giving away our resources for money in their campaign so that they can continue their, you know, endless political cycle. For me, it's just, I'm exhausted by it all because it really is the boy who cried wolf. It's just another story. It's very close to the election times. But in this situation, all the facts are in front of us. We can read the transcript. So it makes it even more clear to me that this is just a charade.
Okay, Rob, your comments regarding what Cody just said.
Well, I don't think that the American people as a whole see it that way. And I think one reason they don't is that they still overwhelmingly get their news from the mainstream media. I mean, you think, for example, of Fox News. That's a leading cable station for news, but I think only about 7% of Americans get their news from Fox News. They get it from the New York Times, the Washington Post, other large newspapers, NBC, ABC, CNN, so forth. And so at this point, I don't think they really see it. And that's why you have nearly a majority of the people favoring impeachment and removal at this point. I think that will change if this gets to the Senate, because I think you're going to see people riveted to their television screens. And I think you're going to see how flimsy they will see how flimsy the case is. All you have to do is go to Google News any morning, and you can see the overwhelmingly negative cast of the treatment of Donald Trump. And that has an effect. You're fooling yourself if you don't think that has an effect on public opinion, because it does.
Okay, a couple of things, though. This could be a big mistake for the Democrats, not only because it goes to the Senate and it'll shed light on what they're doing. I'm with Cody to some degree, as I think people are a bit tired of all of the charades. But if it goes to the Senate, you said the senators have to sit there as jurors. They can't be doing their dog and pony shows that they've done in the past. But that means all of these Democrat senators that are running for office have to come off the campaign trail and be there for these impeachment proceedings, yes?
That's right. And that raises the question of whether the House Democrats really want to send this to the Senate. There's a principle in politics which runs like this. It says, don't trample on your own message. In other words, when you're trying to get a certain message across, you don't go talking about something else. And from the standpoint of the Democrats running for Senate, especially those, for the Democrats running for president, especially those in the Senate, they're trampling all over their own message. They're going to be sitting quietly in the Senate all through the time where they really want to be campaigning in Iowa and in New Hampshire. And so it's very possible that ultimately the House will decide to do something else, maybe a censure resolution, in order to prevent the necessity of a Senate trial, because I can't see by any scenario a Senate trial going well for the Democrats.
They probably know that as well. So, hey, Rob, we have just about
I'm sure they know it. But I think that those people who know it, like Nancy Pelosi, are being pushed by the people in their own party who are consumed by radical ideas and by hatred.
Oh, good point. So, hey, Rob, we're just about out of time. What's the last thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Try to disconnect somewhat from this. There are other important things to think about in life, and maybe we should try to focus on them too.
Okay. Hey, Rob Nadelson, thank you so much. And again, that's a very important piece at Complete Colorado. The Constitution guides impeachment, not politics. So, Rob Nadelson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cody Hubley, it's great having you in studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, and our quote for the day comes from Albert Einstein. He says, "The strength of the Constitution lies entirely in the determination of each citizen to defend it. Only if every single citizen feels duty-bound to do his share in this defense are the constitutional rights secure." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Unknown, and I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free. I was born free. I was born free. The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.